the correct means in terms of physics, and explain to us that Bush had not in mind our small planet, but our universe. It was 300,000 years old. So thank you very much, and have fun.
Thanks. Thanks for coming so early. So this is what I was doing with Ralph before he left me. It's work I've been doing with WMAP first year data. We're interested in testing the Gaussians we've taken, and this led to some interesting anomalies seen, which really actually a deviation from what I sought to do in the CMB. So I am trying to go through some of the data analysis, and I don't want to offend theorists too much, but the point of my talk is to get you to understand the nature of some of those anomalies that have been seen in the data, because we can talk about them quite a lot. And if you're going to come up with theories about what could explain them, you know, you should understand kind of exactly what's going on in because of my quick background. So bear with me, and I'll go through some of the data analysis, and then towards the end, I'll get into the more kind of exciting why theoretical ideas that could explain it. So, table of contents. I'll talk about why I want to do this work, okay? And it's worth testing the CMB for the Gauss Champion isotropy. Or rather, non-Gauss Champion isotropy. So there's some issues relating to this work and how you actually can test these two different features of the data. So issues about the methods. And then I'll talk about some results. This main one is a rebel, we call it, just so it grabs everyone's attention, get them to read the paper. So that's the main result I'll talk about. So this is a correlation between four largest scale multiples. So these are the largest scales in CMB, you're seeing a correlation which indicates a violation of isotropy. I'll then also talk about a couple of other interesting observations. These are work, this work, again by myself and others, it's a review of some other interesting anomalies in CMB asymmetry. So there's been some interesting high level of asymmetry seen in this cosmic background data. One hemisphere to the other is behaving very differently. So I can't actually at the moment relate to this as a people, but I think it's worth bearing in mind that I also briefly mentioned the low power anomaly, which I don't think is particularly significant on its own, but when you combine it to the actual beam and things like that, you've got, I think, three kind of fishy things going on in the data. I don't know how many members of the axis of evil are in Bush's world, but we have three. I'll then move on from the data and the results, and I'll move on to considering some culprits. So then I'll talk about some of the culprits. So how we can test our theories if we come up with something that can be explained a level of isotropy. Culprits include boring things like full wave contamination, it also gives me more wacky ideas that you guys might like a bit more. So I've done a little bit of work considering a few possible culprits, and then our conclusions so far. So I would just show this to set the scene. You're well aware of the WMAP satellite, we've had 1 year of data, and satellites seem to have disappeared since, but here's the result from the first year. So this is our power spectrum. So I'm not particularly interested in the power spectrum, but people get the cosmological parameters out of this. But what I'm interested in is the assumptions that go into extracting the science from the power spectrum. So before you can get your cosmological parameters or anything like that out of this, you have to assume a few major things. So this power spectrum has generally been seen to be great and consistent with a lot of observations. There's a few interesting kind of glitches that some people are interested in. Some people reckon we don't actually have a scale of very high power spectrum, but also there's low power that I'll talk about again later. So anyway, I'm interested in the kind of assumptions we've got to make when we get the science out of the power spectrum. Common assumptions, so one of them, the cosmological principle. So this isn't just for the CMB, this is generally in cosmology. We assume that the universe is homogeneous and isotropic on larger scales. So this is a kind of fundamental principle. It's intuitively very nice. It's the Copernican principle of cosmology. We like it. It simplifies our equations a lot. So you know, things become almost impossible if we don't assume this level of symmetry. And also, it's a prediction of inflation, because if you're going to have a level of anisotropy, you'd have to have a bit of fine-tuning to be able to explain that, because inflation should really got rid of any anisotropy that was there. So that's one of the major assumptions. In terms of the cosmic microwave background, this predicts statistical isotropy. So the fluctuations in the, because we have fluctuations in the cosmic microwave background, so clearly it's not isotropic, but statistically it should be isotropic. if we believe the cosmological principle. So its statistical behaviour should not depend on the orientation of the sky. The other major assumption that goes into extracting science from the power spectrum is Gaussianity. We assume that the initial fluctuations in the universe were Gaussian. So this is predicted generally by all information models because of the kind of quantum origin of the fluctuations. We also assume that, well, really true that the sky still, fluctuations still linear at the CMB, so that preserves the Gaussianity. Different information models, more complicated ones, allow a bit more non-Gaussianity in the data. So testing the CMB for Gaussianity can probe the inflation models, can also possibly tell us some new physics, and also more mundanely, we might be able to pick up on some contamination in the data, because contamination will produce non-Gaussianity. I should have said the cosmological principle is actually quite important to test this, because this is just such a far-reaching assumption that we assume all the time. So it's these two assumptions that I'm interested in, and the problem with a lot of analysis are that these issues are quite often mixed when you're observing the cosmic microwave background. I'll just try and explain that now, but a lot of people, you think you're testing Gaussianity, but you've gone and assumed statistical isotropy and vice versa. So you might all have seen this, but I'm just going to be using this terminology a lot, multipoles, things like that. So when we work with the map, we have the temperature in a particular direction. We usually work with spherical harmonics for a good reason I'll explain in a minute. And we work with these spherical harmonic coefficients. So these are just a bunch of complex numbers that encode all the information using spherical harmonic expansion. Quite often we work with the multiples, so we group together all the fluctuations of a particular size. And these maps that I've been talking about, so your map is made up of a bunch of maps representing the scale, the fluctuations on different scales. And your power spectrum tells you how much power you have in each L, in each scale. So statistical isotropy tells us that the statistical behaviour of the ANMs should just depend on the L, not the M, and that there should be no correlation between different L's. So this comes straight out of statistical isotropy, not Gaussianity, but there should be no correlation between the different multiples, and that's what we went on to have a look at. Gaussianity tells us that this power spectrum should contain any information. Odd order functions of the ANMs are zero, and all the rest you can get from the power spectrum. So the idea is that if you want to test statistical isotropy on its own, you want to look for inter-L correlations. Again, you're not making any assumption about Gaussianity there. In fact, another way of putting it, in each multiple, you have 2L plus 1 degrees of freedom. And really, these should be able to be split out into 3 rotation degrees of freedom, because a multiple is an irreducible representation of the SO3 group. You should be able to get out 3 rotation degrees of freedom, and then 2L minus 2 invariants. And this isn't usually done, but often we work in real space, and these issues are mixed, and you're looking at functions across a range of L's, and you're going to have to assume isotropy before you can test Gaussianity. So I was interested in separating out these degrees of freedom and looking for inter-L correlations which test statistical isotropy, and then the invariants within a multiple that test Gaussianity. So I'm now going to talk about some results. Firstly, I'll talk about the statistical isotropy idea that. And they have been seen, they have been seen correlations between some of the multiples. So, first of all, you'll see this picture. This has come out of the TEDMARC paper, as been reported many times. We're seeing here L equals 2, so we've got the quadrupole, and then we've got L equals 3, which is the octuple. And we are seeing that the octuple is quite planar. And we're also seeing a correlation between these two, which you can see straight away by eye. They seem to be finding a direction up here, and they both seem to know about it. So, intriguingly, both the quadrupole and the octuple are seen to have power suppress along a particular spatial axis.
If you took every combination of multipoles there are, mm-hmm. surely some of them would show some kind of a correlation like that, just because you've taken every one.
Over the whole L range? Sure, so you have, you're totally honing in on the two larger scales. But there is some, it's okay doing that in some ways, because if you're going to expect some interesting cosmology, it's going to come in at the larger scales first. So, and you combine this with the low power, it just makes it. It's not particularly significant on its own, but I'll be able to talk about how the significance increases. But it's more a note rather than a discovery, I think. But But yes, yeah, so it's been seen that these two seem to maybe be finding the same direction, and as I was saying, taking into account quite low power here as well. And these are the larger scales, you know, something fishing might be happening. So when you have these planar kind of configurations, you've got a multiple that is favouring like high end modes in terms of those spherical harmonics. And so what these guys went on to do to see how correlated these are, they basically rigid these two multiples and they actually found what its axis was, in which the kind of frame in which these two look most planar, and they dot what product of those axis, and that 1 in 60, these frames are correlated to that 1 in 60 simulations and more correlation.
Doesn't it line up with the
50? Yeah, so it happens to also be pointing. I'll get to that. I'll pretty much have a review of kind of all these anomalies. But yeah, there's some fishy things going on. It points towards the Virgo cluster as well. So I'll just what I said, basically use the statistic to put some kind of significance on that correlation. So they use the statistics, so your spherical harmonic decomposition depends on the frame you're doing it in, and the N here represents your Z-axis. And this statistic, they kind of decompose into spherical harmonics for lots of different frames, and this statistic will pick out a frame where those multiples look most planar, and they have like power in the high end, basically. And they get two axes, so this is for L equals 2, is this one, for L equals 2, is this one. They took the dot product and they got that it was about 1 in 6 was significant. So not huge, but interesting. So we went on to do something a bit more general. Those two kind of jump out at you by eye. You can see the correlation because you've got this planar configuration that you can see how you rotate the sky. But we thought we'd do a bit something a bit more general. We're not looking for when a multiple looks very planar. We just asked, when does it look a lot like any spherical harmonic? So this idea of M preference. So all the M's should be equal in a multiple. And if you're getting some kind of M preference, you're getting a sign of a deviation from statistical isotropy because it will happen in a particular frame. So we asked each multiple to find a frame where it looked most like a pure spherical harmonic when it was dominated by some kind of M preference. And so the statistic we used for this, so I'll just go through this. So we're working out this statistic, and we're working it over many rotations of the sky. And the idea is that for each rotation of the sky, you ask how much power is in each of the M's. And this is just the total power in your multiple. This is rotation invariant. And so for each rotation of the sky, how much power is in each of the M's? And you maximize this over the M's and then over all the rotations of the sky. And so by the end, you find when the multiple looks most like a pure spherical harmonic. So basically, we're trying to look for a way of defining a frame for each multiple so that we can then look for internal correlations. That was the idea. So this returns three things for each multiple.
Let's clarify something. In the data, there's a problem with this very little power at large angle. Now, the low multipoles are the ones which are most sensitive to that. So is this effect that you're seeing possibly due to the fact that those multipoles are constrained, that they can't have a large contribution at large angle?
No. Say that again. The low power is due to...
Well, no, the low power is the data.
There's low power. This is unrelated to the power.
No, but you're extracting out the multiples from the data. And the data have no power at large.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't matter.
These multiples will be the ones that are most sensitive to that.
You mean they're quite wobbly, they're to noise and things like that, because their power is quite low? Yeah, people look at...
Well, I don't know whether this effect is a different effect than the statement that the low multiples are cut off.
Yeah, right. It's a different statement. It doesn't matter what the power is, the orientation, and then you get an overall kind of power. The orientation is like a completely different thing. I'm not really looking at the power at the moment.
Is that because this is normalized? So within each L, you're normalizing it. So it has to be a L with its low power.
It doesn't matter.
It's still normalized.
Yeah. This doesn't pick this up. Yeah. Okay. So we get... Yeah.
Well, so I think what Philip made me say, I think this is what I heard. If you take all the WMF data, it involves some enormous number of pixels. And the number of pixels that are involved in making this quadrophonological analysis is an incredibly small fraction.
Yeah, it's very sensitive.
I bet it's something.
It is more sensitive. Exactly. That's why the low power.
have you looked at that, the total number of pixels or so? I don't know what the numbers
are. Yeah, so they're most sensitive to cuts in the sky and to noise and to contamination and things like that. So the low power problem, when you take into account, I think, this point actually isn't very significant. But what I'm looking at actually has nothing to do with the power. Okay, it's just the orientation of the multiple. And again, even this orientation may be more sensitive for this, for these multiples than for others. But yeah, we just have to, yeah, it's going to be, they are going to be a bit more sensitive than others. So this returns for each multiple three things. Okay, so that says ratio, how much M preference. The idea is that if in some frame a multiple is just dominated by some M, which just looks like a pure threat harmonic, we'll get a ratio of one M for a particular frame. Okay, so this topic depends on our M, this is our Z axis. We also return the M's, which M did it look like? Okay, so we saw N was 2 and N was 3, okay, when plane at M's, we wanted to see if that preference continued. And then the important thing is we get direction, we get a frame. So we're trying to find a frame for each multiple so that we can look and see if there's inter-multiple correlations. So now I've got quite a few pictures that I think make this all a lot clearer. The first two are quite obvious. I'll show L equals 2. So this is just what I showed before. So L equals 2, and it's not surprising that there is some frame. I've just rotated into that frame, where it's dominated by M equals 2, okay? So that's what our statistic picked out in our scores as well. And so in this frame, it looks a lot like a pure M equals 2. This is just a pure spherical harmonic. And 96% of the power is in M equals 2 for this frame. So we went on to do the other multiples, okay? And this is, okay, so L equals 3, again, not surprising, you can see it straight away, but I, there's a frame where it looks like M equals 3. So we've got 94% of the power in M equals 3 in this mode. So we can get out M's, we get out a direction, we get out a ratio, and we can see what's going on. L equals 4, just looks like a mess, you can't see it at all, but there's a frame where it looks like N equals 2. So it's not surprising, you can't always do this, okay? I'll get to what was surprising that's in a minute, and you have 88% of the power in N equals 2. You can see it, they look quite similar. So we can carry on, N equals 5, again, looks quite neat, that one. You can rotate it, and it's heavily in N equals 3 mode. So yeah, we've got 90% of the power in N equals 3 for this frame. You can go on, N equals 6, this one's not so strong, it's only 80%. It's dominated by N equals 1 mode. So this is what we did. So we're trying to get a direction for every multiple, which is this Z axis. We're trying to get an M, to see if there's some kind of pattern going on with the M. We're getting a ratio, you know, is there a high M preference? So what we found was that the M's that were using were not particularly significantly, any M, okay? We also found the ratios weren't significant. So this again, so people say the fact that the octopole plane is really significant, we think if you allow it to, like a different prior, if you allow it to always look like some M, we don't think it's particularly significant. But what was significant is those frames were the same for N equals 2, 3, 4, and 5. So you can see it straight away by eye that N equals 2 and 3 are correlated. Turns out N equals 4 and 5 are also correlated, and it's exactly the same direction within about 20 degrees of each other. Those four multiples are all finding the same frame. So this is taking that significance of N equals 2 and 3 being correlated, we've now got 4 and we've got 5, so it's increased it significantly.
Yeah. As you go up in the modes, you find modes where finally it's randomly distributed across the M's.
Pretty much straight after 5, it becomes they're paid 5. After 5, so say 2, 3, 4, 5 all agree, and after that they stopped. But it's not like a, it sounds like a sudden cutoff because of the way which to define the statistic. Even if there's some feature that was coming in quite gently, it's a discrete statistic, so we would get it.
So if you go to say L of 10, so there are 21 modes, there are 21 M's, is there sort of 5% in each mode?
Yeah, so they're all pretty even. They're meant to be. We did simulations, okay, compared them to simulations. And because of the way we define our statistic, you don't. Yeah, if you took a random frame, it should get even power in all of those 21 modes. But we define it so that you pick the one where there's a lot in one. So that ratio, those ratios do come down. And I think by N equals 20, yeah, it's pretty even. But yeah. So yeah, we found that the fact that N equals 2, there's some frame where you've got 95% power and not than one M is absolutely fine. that's a kind of normal, there should be that much interference in some frame. Does that make sense? So the ratios weren't significant, okay? The fact that you can do that is not, not the fact that you can do that to the data was significant, you want to do that. But it was the directions. So the M's weren't significant, the R's weren't significant, but the directions were significant. Okay?
So what statistic do you use to compare? I understand you get an axis for each L. Mm-hmm. You know, you ask for the two most discrepant being within some angle, or to get the 99?
To get the 99%, I mean, to the simulations, and we ask for the chance that those four were also this closely bound. So we have honed in on N equals 2, 3. We asked simulations if those four were, if they found those four axes to be so tightly in one and the same kind of solid angle. Yeah. So I guess what we maybe
most two most discrepant, I guess, defines the statistic.
We took the average dot product between four vectors and compared to simulations.
The simulations were just of a random Gaussian map?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we looked at the kind of foreground templates that WMAP put out to see if they could get kind of axes of even in them, and we couldn't see one. And they have kind of synchrotron templates and things like that, and there wasn't an axes of evil in them. So there's got to be correlation between these foreground.
So a general question. So you've got these coefficients, ALN, and to discuss, we're talking about some theory that predicts these with a certain probability. Presumably we're thinking about some theoretical ensemble of sky.
Yes.
Different temperature distributions and different sets of these coefficients.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that if you assume statistical isotropy, it follows that the probability distribution for each ALM does not depend on N.
Yeah.
So that means that for each L, I have 2L plus 1 data point from which I can deduce something about the probability distribution, because I've got L is going to be larger than a large number of data points. Okay. Now, what I find puzzling is that if I'm considering that maybe there is not statistical isotropy, so in principle, each ALM can have its own probability distribution.
Yeah.
So I got one data point for each.
Yeah.
Could be an independent probability distribution. How do I even do or think about statistical analysis?
Yeah, so if you didn't have, yeah, so that's why they're all kind of tied up. So that's why usually to test Gaussian emitting, you have to assume statistical isotropy, you can't get anywhere without. But then I did say we could ideally separate issues. But I think that's because over the ensemble, if you assume Gaussianity, you still get this M independence anyway. If you need over the ensemble your ALMs to come from a if you want your fluctuations to be Gaussian, I think the ensemble cannot have M preference.
Couldn't each ALM just be a Gaussian in a random variable?
I think then over the ensemble, your fluctuations will not behave as a Gaussian ensemble.
You mean Gaussian and isotropic?
Sorry?
You mean Gaussian?
Gaussian but not isotropic.
But you could have an isotropic correlation matrix. But then it's very difficult to test that for the reasons.
You'd have to have a theory about
that. Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't see how one could even begin to test it. If one is thinking about non-isotropy generally,
But you're asking a more difficult question. Yeah.
The first step is to test the simplest null hypothesis.
Right, sorry. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I've really thought about this.
You're testing a restricted form of.
So there's two things that statistical isotropy says. Yeah, there's two things that statistical isotropy says. One is there's no indirect correlations, I can do that. That's easy.
Okay,
that one is that there should be no end reference.
And that you're not.
That one I cannot separate out from Gaussianity so simply.
Right, okay.
And I have a problem, yeah.
Okay.
When we look at algorithms, I think it's an interesting problem.
So in the average value of ALM, A, L prime, M prime,
yeah.
We are in agreement in the delta L prime? And just targeting over the delta M M prime?
Yeah. yeah. So yeah, I mean that, I mean mathematically, if you just want a function of the data for your rotation invariant, it has to have that form. Yeah, we're talking about.
So I see if there's no mixing of different L's.
I'm confused now what we're talking about. Anyway, we can talk about this more later. The idea is that I was looking at intra correlations, which is one way of, you know, a deviation from statistical isotropy would jump out as a correlation between different L's. So we're seeing a high correlation between the four largest scales. I'm going to skip through a few slides on multiple vectors and instead talk about this. So if I put these four multiples now, in, they're each in their own preferred frame. So these are pretty much the same frame, give or take about 10 degrees either side. Okay, so I put them each in their own, but this is pretty much the same frame. We've got elements 2, 3, 4, 5. There was another interesting feature maybe about these multiples, and that's they're all choosing the mirror positive parity modes. Okay, so about their planes, they're choosing positive mirror modes.
You mean the maximum M is favored?
So the M that is favored is L plus M is always even. Yeah. So it's not particularly significant on its own because it has to either choose positive mirror parity or negative. Okay, so we've got four, they happen to be all choosing positive. It's just interesting to note. And then what we did was actually have a look at how much power in the positive mirror modes compared to the negative mirror modes. This isn't just simply how much power is in that M, how much in the positive mirror modes compared to the negative. And we found this to be consistently high. It wasn't particularly significant, I'm saying about 90%. But when you consider that this feature is independent from the preferred axis feature, we kind of times these numbers together to get that. But the idea is that we're seeing a major correlation between the four largest scales with a hint of positive mirror parity. Okay, so if you've got a theory that's going to explain some preferred direction, you might want to be explaining positive mirror parity as well. So I kind of have in my head that some non-trivial topologies might induce one parity over the other, or something like that, but I haven't actually worked that through. So this is what we've called the axis of evil. I'm going to move on from this anomaly and talk about some other interesting anomalies, and then I'll talk about some
one more question. What is the actual amplitude of the best-fitting ALM after you've done the rotation, typically in micro Kelvin?
So, but I mean, the ratios were, so you get like 90% of the power in that ALM.
So, just think the square root doesn't bother.
Yeah, so I actually don't have those numbers in my head. Okay, so I'm going to move on now to some other anomalies. So forget about the X of E for a moment, but we've got four largest scales being correlated. I'm now going to Wesmay symmetries because I think this is a interesting feature. This is something I actually looked at first. It's a completely different type of anomaly which has been seen in the first EW map, but I think equally significant. And it's been seen that different parts of the sky are behaving very differently in particular cut. So these people first looked at the power spectrum. If you estimate the power spectrum from one half of the sky and compare it to the estimated power spectrum you get from the other half of the sky, you're getting very different results. And interestingly, if you want to go and get your cosmological parameters from this, you get really different results what half of the sky you use. So I think this is important to take into account. So what they did is they took the WMAP data, kind of would place a north pole somewhere, draw the hemisphere around there, estimate the power spectrum, and sum up all the power. They do it for the opposite hemisphere, and they would take the ratio, and they do this for lots of north pole positions. I'll show you the result. The idea is that ignore these dots, look at the big red ones, and these disks represent the position of the north pole. When you put your north pole position there, take the data from that half of the sky, calculate the power spectrum, sum up the power, do it for the opposite, and then you divide. If you've got a dark color, you've got a high ratio, and a light color is a small ratio. Basically, the idea is that over here, you're getting a lot more power. And this is a lot of L ranges. This is L2 up to 62, they saw it, but it goes up to 100. So this is no longer just a feature of the larger scales. We're seeing on a large range of L, on a large L range, you get significantly more power over here than you do over here. Sometimes you can convince yourself by eye, you can see it in WMAP data, but it's always dangerous. And they compared it to simulation to also allow to find the axis where they maximize the asymmetry. So you will always have an axis where you can maximize the asymmetry. But they found this to be particularly significant. And so the axis 57:10. So L goes along like that, 57:10. So if it's somewhere over here, if you draw your axis like that, and you divide the sky like that, you get a lot more power over here than over on the other side. So this is really interesting. So maybe we're seeing, you know, a level of inhomogeneity, something like that. We went and had a look at it with the bispectrum and found similar results. Also, the endpoint correlation functions have been seen to be in the north, which are usually ecliptic hemispheres, which aren't far off in these other hemispheres. The north is very flat and featureless. And in the south, it's nice and bumpy, so it's frozen with the power spectrum. It's nice and bumpy. You've got lots of normal stuff going on down in the south. Up in the north, it's particularly flat and bare. And if you want to estimate your cosmological parameters, you get very different results depending on what hemisphere you use. We went and had a look at the bispectrum, so it's a cubic function of the air length. So this is going to be zero if you're out in the sky. We actually looked at the normalized bispectrum because this should be. This is statistically independent from the power spectrum for a Gaussian and a tropical sky. I was doing this because we were testing the Gaussianity of the data, and we found the double map data to be perfectly consistent with Gaussianity. But when we looked at each hemisphere on its own, we got a similar result as the power spectrum. We get very different power spectrums in one part of the sky when compared to another. This is a particularly good example, but you could find some heavens in this phase when you get quite a positive power spectrum and some you get quite a negative power spectrum. And we would look over the whole range and we'd take the difference between these lines for lots of different cuts. And the idea is we were trying to plot a similar picture to them. And so the colour represents the percentage, the fraction of simulations that are finding a smaller K value. So that was the difference between the lines. Basically, the idea is that over here you're getting consistently negative bispectrums, and over here you're getting consistently positive bispectrums. The bispectrum is a bit of a rubbish statistic because intuitively I can't really tell what it's telling me. But the idea is that you're seeing the same kind of asymmetry in the bispectrums as you're seeing in the power spectrum. Okay, and it's the same axis that maximises this. People went and looked at the local curvature of the map. So it's when you count how many hills and saddles and lakes you've got in your map, basically just pixel by pixel, and they would count up how many lakes they've got in various hemispheres and compare it to simulations and percentage of simulations that find a higher pi squared. So the North Pole centered on disks around here, you're getting so you take the hemisphere like this, you're getting a funny number of lake counts in the map. Okay? So these are feel very convoluted statistics, but the idea is with loads and loads of different statistics, this has been done with more kind of a data analysis of the map, the spherical wavelets, and the genus statistics. That's where you count the number of hot points and cold points. And consistently, people are finding that for a cut, basically across here, you cut the sky, you get this hemisphere behaving very differently to that hemisphere. Okay, so we've got another kind of further direction in the data, very different from the axis of evil. This is seen over a lot of L ranges.
So just to clarify, the L. That LB 57 is pole.
The pole for which
so
maximizes.
Okay, so this is galactic coordinates with
zero to
center.
Zero. Okay. Yeah, and L goes from 0 to plus 180.
Okay.
And 0 to minus 180.
And the path where there's the excess power is at the 57:10.
So that's where there's actually the less power, less power. And the excess is behind.
Yeah, this is on the opposite side of the sky. Okay.
The excess is down here.
240-ish minus 10. Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, you've got too much here and too little there. That's the idea. Yeah. Okay.
So. How statistically significant is this? Because you can always find some, at least exactly. You can always find some axis.
So everyone's always done, what everyone's always done in all these papers is you get your simulations, you allow each of them to also maximize its asymmetry, and you compare your results with those. And so it's still always consistently being over like 98% significant. You don't get this level of asymmetry. Okay, so I'm just going to summarize some of these anomalies. And then talk about some of the interesting culprits. Okay, so just group together all the things I was talking about. So this is what I was just talking about. In this direction, we are seeing a high level of asymmetry from this side to that side, okay? Oh, you can't see my stars, but I think the red, that's going to be red stars. And that's the direction which maximizes the asymmetry. The fishy thing is, I think at the white stars, you've also got the ecliptic poles, okay? So the scanning strategy of the satellite kind of mimics, it goes over from over here to over there and back, and you get a lot more observations around here and here than you do across here. So you've got plenty of correlation with the scanning strategy of the satellite. But the scanning strategy of the satellite is symmetric from this side to this side. It's just it's difficult to tie it in with this anomaly. You've also got supergalactic poles, and those are the black ones, I think. So our local kind of web of structure is in a plane kind of around here. So you've got maybe a correlation between this asymmetry and our local structure. So this is what I meant by seeing it by eye. If you blow your eyes and you're really gullible, you think you can actually see a lot more stuff going on. I don't know. Sometimes I think I can see it, but the edges, there's a lot more stuff going on down here. So that's one certainty anomaly I was just talking about. There's also this cold spot. People reckon this is like 6 sigma non-Gaussian, but I don't know. I don't know about that. But it might be playing a little bit of an effect.
Can you explain what you mean by the scanning strategy of the satellite? Yeah. You say that scanning itself is not isotropic in assembly.
Well, I can't figure out why. Yeah, so basically the satellite scans these areas more times than it does this, just in the way it rotates.
It gets more data.
Yeah, it gets more data from these two areas than it does from the middle, okay?
So the thing does is a big circle, which always intersects.
That's all they can.
Well, it should be, yeah. And the thing is, and I was asking him because I thought it might be cool if it kind of does over here first and then it gets to there later in the year, but it doesn't. It's back and forth every hour, so it'd be difficult to actually explain the asymmetry. But there's a funny correlation. There's a funny correlation, supergalactic plane as well. Anyway, we've got the cold spot. And then the other anomaly I talked about first, the axis of evil, is in this direction. So here we've got the axis of evil. The fishy thing about this direction is you've also got the dipole due to our motion pretty much in exactly the same direction, okay? So the dipole due to our motion relative to the other background is in the same direction. So if you think that's it's not being accounted for correctly, or there's some feature we're not thinking of, it's a bit suspect. We've also got a big Virgo cluster here as well. So, and then the other weird thing is that this is 90 degrees to that, but I can't see why that should be correlated. That should be a reason. So now I just flash up here at the moment at the bottom that says low power on large scales, just as my kind of third anomaly that maybe we should be considering at the same time. And I kind of put them all up for you because quite often when you try and come up with something that could be explaining one of these, you can make the others worse. And if you really believe some of these, then you would want to come up with some theory that could explain maybe more than one of them at a time. But I think these are the most interesting features that have been seen in the WMAP first year data. Here we've got this correlation on four larger scales in this direction, and then on this direction we've got a major asymmetry from one half of the sky to the other. It's not at all clear that these two are related at the moment. And then we've also got low power, which I don't think is significant, but maybe when you tie it in with these others it is. So I'll just talk about some of the culprits. So as I was saying, mundanely, systematics, okay? Maybe something in the satellite, something in the data pipeline, something funny, some human error. Astrophysical effects, so these are kind of local effects. Maybe we've got four-band contamination, maybe our local structures lending the map in some way we're not taking account of, something like that. And then the more exciting cosmological features, maybe we're seeing a deviation from your usual homogeneous and isotropic universe. Maybe we're seeing non-true topology. There's all kinds of ideas that I'll go through later. And I just put this up to preempt the question I always get. Maybe it just is. Maybe we've just completely overdone the analysis. And there's just too many PhD students working on this WMAP data, and you know, one of them's always going to turn up something funny, even if it was a perfect Gaussian map. So I don't know what I can say about that. I think we just have to be honest about reporting our null results as well as our true results, as well as our interesting results, so which we're not always going to do. But yeah, we just have to bear it in mind and try and be realistic about this. So a word about the kind of four-way of contamination idea, the systematics. I'm just gonna, in this paper, these people looked at these four large bars and they looked at different ways of cleaning the map. They looked at taking different amounts of sky cuts of the map. They looked at different frequencies of the data. They looked at Coley as well. And they looked at the consistency of these multiples all the time, okay? So here I have three different ways of cleaning the map. And we have the four multiples that are correlated. And so these are finding that consistently these are pretty much the same, okay? I'll just show you by eye. They did do some statistics on these. The one that always changes the most is n equals 2, which is kind of what you were saying. It's got the least pixels contributing to it. It's always going to be the one that wobbles the most, okay? So these are three different ways of cleaning the map. These are different sky cuts. So KP2 mask is the W mask that is the smallest, okay? KP0 is the most conservative. You mask out a lot of the galaxy. This is when you take 20 degrees on either side. And again, they're pretty consistent all the way through. N equals 2 wobbles the most. We haven't run our axis of evil on this, but maybe we should. Yeah.
When you say, in the last thing, what you're saying is you don't take anything near the
galactic.
Galactic plane. Okay. So if it was just that the galaxy was radiating in the microwave, and that was the explanation, that would eliminate that.
Yeah.
And the effect is still there when you eliminate that.
Well, I haven't. We haven't run it on all these different kinds of cuts, but we ran it on different frequencies, and it was then on frequencies. So a galaxy will radiate differently in different frequencies, but CMB is the same in all the frequencies, and the feature is consistently strong in all these different frequencies. So we ruled out foregrounds on that round, but we did take sky cuts because our analysis is really, really meaningful sky, just where we rotate those ALMs.
So you don't think that, even though it lines up with the plane of the galaxy, you really don't think it should.
Well, the axis of evil is off from the plane of the galaxy, yeah.
You know, the plane of the solar system, which is even more bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, so the galaxy's always been along like that.
Yep.
And the axis of evil's always been off.
The axis is, but the plane where most of the power is of course perpendicular to the axis, and that's not that far off of the plane, huh?
Yeah, it's not that far.
I mean, if you look at the Tegmark map, the big holes and bumps that you see by eye are right there in the plane.
Okay, so here you ignore the data 20 degrees either side of the galaxy, and it's still there. And here, they look at different frequencies, and you get a lot more four-band contamination in your K-band than you do in all these. And N equals 2 is wobbling quite a bit. N equals 3 is the same. Okay, and if it was due to the galaxy, you would get different features and different frequencies, okay? So N equals 2 is the one that's the weakest. Coley, WMAP, pretty much the same. Again, N equals 2 is the one that's changed the most. But we are seeing correlations in 4 of these. So anyway, I think those pictures are actually quite convincing that it's not simply going to be explained by systematics or something like that. So I'm going to talk about some of the more interesting ideas. I will consider the contamination ones and things like that. I think it'd be good to have some more data to look at, so more noise comes down and things. I'm waiting for more WMAP data. But in the meantime, we had a look at some Bianchi models, Bianchi 7 models, in which there's a rotation. And shear, and so the Bianchi models are a class of anisotropic cosmological models. We looked at 7 models because these ones have a free parameter we can bear, and they give you these swells, which you should see in the cosmic microwave background. So this is a bit of a bonkers one, which we clearly don't see in the cosmic microwave background. The idea was that actually another team did this first. They looked over a range of different swirls and tried to see if they could see one in the cosmic microwave background. They came up with this one. They said that you can see this. There's a really high significance that this template matches some of the CMB. Okay, so when you take this template off the WMAP data, you get rid of a lot of the problems. You get rid of some of the asymmetry in the power. You get rid of some of the alignments. You get rid of the finality of the optical. You get rid of this non-Gaussian spot, because basically this lands on it. And you get rid of some of the low power problems. So it's quite interesting, maybe we're seeing it behind the model, but I think this was never really taken very seriously, because this means that the omega total is 0.5, okay? So it's not a real serious contender, but it was quite an interesting idea.
I think the principal problem with these models is, why should the effect of the axis of evil and the effect of all of the rest of the fluctuations be at the same delta t over t? I mean, it should be totally unrelated. I mean, if you said that there's a background of delta t over t is 10 to the minus 5, and then in one very funny direction you see delta t over t is 10 to the minus 3, that would possibly be the same. But it seems...
Oh, well, these are the extra redshifts and blueshifts you get from your...
Yeah, but why should they even know about the same temperature scale?
Yeah, so it's a fine-tuning problem, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. These models always, they run into conflict with basically inflation. And, yeah, they shouldn't be on the same scale, yeah. Exactly, you need a lot of fine-tuning. Yeah, so there's many problems with the Bianchi models. But they were just an interesting idea. We also went on to consider some way you restrict yourself to a flat universe. I mean, there are a lot of coincidences in cosmology, so we don't worry about introducing some more. We thought about the flat ones. They tend to have power down here. What we decided to do was see whether a flat Bianchi model could account for the low power. Like, perhaps initially there had been a Gaussian process which was more consistent with the data, and then some Bianchi model had come in and subtracted some of the power. I flash it up, we got this one. All these problems, the Bianchi models were not taken too seriously. But it's just interesting because this was the power you have in your map before you account for a template. This was the power in this template, it's down here. When you took this template away from the map, we then got a much more consistent power spectrum. But we didn't actually find this fit to be particularly significant, so I just show it. And I think I conclude that we do not live in the Bianchi 7 model, which I'm sure everyone's relieved about. A more realistic idea, still I think it falls into the astrophysical category, is lensing from local structure. And this is what he called his paper, so he's keeping in the spirit of things. So the local pancake is our local web of structure, that's what he's talking about, the pancake, and the local structure is not homogeneous. And he was saying that if structure's moving in the same frame as us, it's moving at the same speed as us, it sees the same dipole. And we've got that funny correlation between the dipole direction and this axis of evil. And he's saying perhaps the dipole has been lensed and has leaked to the other multipoles. Okay, so once you take the dipole off, you're not correcting for this leaking. Okay, and it'll explain the axis of evil and explain not just that you've got correlation between multipoles, but why it's also in the dipole direction. So I'll just show you my little diagram. He's not talking about the intrinsic CMB fluctuation because that's too tiny. Once you lens in, you're not going to see that. He's talking about dipole due to our motion. So if we just think we've just got a monopole around us and we're moving relative to us, we'll see a dipole. And if there's something also seeing the same dipole as us, it will lens it. And so this is some large local pancake. And it will lens it into other multipoles. And then we'll take our dipole off and we'll have this leaking into the other multipoles. So this has a few problems, mainly that there is nothing huge enough that is moving with the same velocity as us. Okay, so he originally modeled this as a great attractor, but we're moving actually towards it, so it's not actually, it's stationary. So it didn't quite work, but he's come up with a more kind of realistic model, kind of where you have lots of structural, just the local flow of structure might be having an effect. The local flow of structure is going to be seeing various dipoles and they're lensing them, and maybe there's some kind of contribution from that which it may be seen. People have brought out other papers saying it's not useful, but it's a nice idea and it could explain some coincidences.
I'm actually working with Chris Bale on this exact problem.
Yeah.
You know, I sent him my density and velocity field,
uh-huh.
And he reckons maybe 3 microkelvin.
Okay.
In the quadrupole and the octopole from the realistic field. So whether that's enough to get rid of the axis of evil,
it's difficult, isn't it?
Will significantly reduce the significance of
it. Yeah, I'm not sure.
How much, I don't know.
So you've got another problem though, because then you lens it should increase the power in those multiples, and so you've got another, you make the low power problem worse.
Not a huge amount. Yeah, in his original paper, he was positing a very strong effect.
Right, okay.
This is a smaller, you know, it's roughly a quarter of the actual signal. Okay. If you introduce a correlated signal in all these higher order multiples, that's, you know, so what we want, and the obvious thing to do is to subtract this off and see whether what's left over is still consistent.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. I quite like this idea. That'd be interesting. I'll put up some more, really, of the more wacky ideas. Sorry, Jonathan, what the point of this? I'll just go through these ways of getting an anisotropic universe. Non-trivial topologies, okay? So lots of people talked about this because of the low power, and it's quite nice, the idea of non-trivial topologies, because you do get rid of two of those problems at once. You can maybe get axis of evil and explain the low power, whereas most methods of explaining the axis of evil make the low power problem worse, because if you get some kind of contamination in the map, you should always get a higher power spectrum. So non-trivial topologies are quite nice, yes. So you'll get a preferred direction and you'll get a cutoff on the power. It remains to be seen which topologies could actually produce the axis of evil. So, but I think it's an interesting idea. But again, there's coincidence problems about why we should just be kind of detecting the scale now. You know, it would need a lot of fine tuning. So Lamarck, Coleman, Bondi models, well, I mean, these are inhomogeneous models, so Moffat and others have been looking at the idea that we're living, we take account of the local inhomogeneity, as he pointed out, that the local universe is not homogeneous at all. We can see structure all over the place. The recent universe, maybe we have to be taking account of inhomogeneities, and Moffat's done some work to show that you can easily explain the asymmetries and also the excess of evil if you're in some kind of void. Maybe you're a little bit off-center, I think, to get the axis of evil, and could be explained some of these problems. Dominating on wavelength modes. What I mean by that is, if you had a lot of power on particular wavelengths, some kind of glitch in the interneutron potential, something like that, locally you would see a gradient, and you'd be seeing a direction. Eccentric universe, that's what this paper was called. They considered magnetic fields, and whether a magnetic field making the universe expand, not spherically, but anisotropically, like an ellipse. Other Bianchi models to be considered. I think the idea that maybe the primordial power spectrum is different in different directions. So it doesn't just depend on the modulus of K now, it actually depends on your direction. Maybe there's some kind of anisotropy in the early universe. It was pretty much inflated away, but we're left over with a hint of it in the primordial power spectrum. So this is quite an interesting idea to go and ask the data whether it would prefer an anisotropic power spectrum. The more mundane contamination, this is what I'm doing at the moment. I'm looking for correlations between axes of evil and local structure. So maybe it would tell me that there's some kind of foreground contamination. It could also arise from the Chris Vail idea of the pancake. You would maybe expect to see these features correlating with local structures. That's what I'm working on at the moment. So my conclusions are, I think it's important to test our assumption about isotropy and Gaussianity. Still, difficult to separate these issues. We can, to some degree, separate the issues, but not fully. We can have a crack at it. I think there's evidence for interesting deviations in the first WMAP data. It'd be good to have some more data to look at. But I think there's some really significant features. And we do not know at the moment, nothing really coming up with something that could explain them. Okay.
There are some large L values, as you show, as you pointed out, L above the numbers, where the CL seems to be several set of deviations away from.
Right, it bites in the past. Yeah.
Yes, I think two or three. Has anyone had a chance to look at those?
Some people actually have really carved up the sky. Those people who did the power spectrum on different hemispheres, they then went and carved up the sky into much smaller disks. And they reckon they can explain some of the bites just from certain kind of regions of the sky, and there usually are ones near the galaxy. They think they can explain some of those bites from anomalous kind of contaminated data near the galaxy. I don't know about all the bites.
Yeah, that would be much smaller anymore.
They looked at lots of L ranges. So they reckon they can. I can't remember which bites it was, but there were a couple of those bites they can pinpoint to particular areas of the sky behaving funny, they think. But that would be more likely to be contamination rather than an interesting kind of homogeneous model. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, what about something done like the solar system is sitting inside of a molecular cloud, which is absorbing in the microwave?
Okay.
You mean the black cloud?
Yeah, the black cloud. We should think about the black cloud. You know, the spread of oil.
I think
it's worse. Well, absorbing in the microwave, so if you're absorbing low frequency.
Yeah, I don't know actually.
That's very difficult.
Why should it be 10 to the minus 5?
No, it's absorbing.
Yes.
No, so it's not trying to just taking, it's just taking...
Just like dust getting in the way.
Just dust. Dust or molecules.
But it should be on all scales, shouldn't it? Not just L range. Not as L's are 2 or 3.
No, but if the cloud is symmetric, wouldn't that preferentially...
No, the problem is the frequency is the spectrum. How do you get
Yeah, you'd get a different behavior, you get different absorption and different frequencies. And you'd get significantly different power than what frequency you're looking at. WMF does 5 frequencies. And the power...
Well, maybe the cloud is sitting at 3 degrees itself. And so it's always thermalized.
So that's the state universe.
No. The solar system, you know, is just sitting inside of a flat cloud, which is thermalized at the temperature of the CMB.
But I think any process that absorbs radiation does it more... It has a spectrum, it won't. Do it the same.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, I don't know about much about
molecular accounts.
It
was just a technical question, the separation of isotropy and Gaussian assumption. Did I understand that correctly? You have to do simulations under preserved assumptions for testing significance. Why can't you use such approaches like bootstrap or permutation tests where you do not need these assumptions in order to test for isotropy? Would that be, are there arguments why that can be done? Or?
So say that again, I don't think I
understand. I mean, there are statistical tests that do not need assumptions about distributions, like permutation tests or bootstrap tests, where you just kind of reorganize the data and generalize surrogate simulations from your data, not from a model, in which you could use as a significant test of significance for particularly isotropy without using the assumption of Gaussian distributions.
Okay.
I mean, I do not know that field, so I do not know whether there are restrictions why whether one can use that or not, but in principle, that would be an approach to separate them.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think how that works. I should go and look at the CMB.
In the string theory, in the standard inflation model, inflation just wipes out all energy needs and energy. So, and also it doesn't lead to a loss of power of the realm. So the question is, how do you say inflation if this is correct? Because you have to do some severe fine tuning. Some work has already been done by Quintality, Kaufman, and others. So if this holds up, then I think the equation has a serious problem.
Yeah, so any kind of...
We have to look at alternative models.
So if you're explaining these anomalies as anything start, you know, in the early universe, I mean, if anything fundamental, then inflation is always going to have a problem, isn't it? Whereas your idea about recent stuff kind of gets around that, doesn't it? Because inflation should have got rid of any kind of limit of the original material kind of sort of figure.
Which is, so, I don't think is correct.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Make a comment. I don't think you should link the axis of evil with the low power issue on large angle.
Mm-hmm.
The axis of evil issue is basically you're testing a kinematic property of nature, namely isotropy. Whereas the absence of any power at large angle is not an anomaly. That's the state. It's only a problem if you have a particular dynamical theory. Inflation, where you expect to see something.
Yeah.
So one is a kinematic issue, and the other is really the detailed testing of a particular dynamical model. And I wouldn't call it an anomaly.
Okay.
It's just a problem for theorists.
Okay, cool. I think the reason we connected it originally is just the way we're thinking about it is if you don't have power, if there's a frame where you don't have power in some end modes, you'll get low power and you'll get an axis of evil, so forth. We were thinking very much in terms of input and that kind of thing. And that way we could tie them together, but again, yeah, we didn't want to, I just...
No, but the... you take these vectors, Maxwellian vectors, and you dot them into one another, and you're getting sort of like one sort of theory. And he's telling you that you don't have a such a theory as what you need. So I don't know whether this is a problem for theorists, this is the issue, and this is a problem.
Well, I think we should discuss those cases. Today she's here the whole day. Unfortunately, not tomorrow. She's here on trip to Toronto. So please leave some time and discuss the subject. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
For